What is good, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the Malaga Drive Hoops Betting Podcast. As usual, it's your boy Caleb. We're here to break down what went down in these last series, as well as look forward to the respective conference finals on each side. I hope you guys are doing well. I appreciate you guys being here with me. Just a heads up, before we get even into anything, I'm headed to Europe tomorrow. Obviously, that makes it tougher to watch these games. They're starting anywhere from 1 to 3 a.m., and that is the worst time. Like, even if it's at, like, 11 a.m. or some weird time, or, like, 5 a.m., 4 a.m. even, you stick it at 1 to 3 a.m., and it's just the two-hour worst spot you could find. But we will do our best. Obviously, the volume of episodes was going to go down a little bit anyways, because we have less games. We don't even have a game tomorrow. But I'm just giving you guys a heads up. We'll still work our way through everything. But you guys can understand. And again, where we are at our highest volume is going to be in the regular season, where we got slate after slate after slate with multiple games every day, different teams playing different teams. But that's that. Let's get into what went down tonight and just what went down in general. Let's start with the Knicks Pacers. We talked about it. I fully on the record at the start of the series, picking the Knicks in seven. But as the series progressed, right, like you get Mitchell going down in game two, not Donovan, Mitchell Robinson. You have OG going down, I think, in game two as well. Maybe Mitchell was game one. And then it gets to – and then obviously Josh Hart even last game. I know he played today, but clearly not right. And I think that's the difference. I know actually that's the difference, right? Because I think if you told me this Knicks team was fully healthy, I think they probably still – it's still a really tough series. It goes – honestly, probably still goes seven. But you just get worn down. You just get worn down as a player. You can get through it. That's why to me in the playoffs – I'm fully aboard for playing your guys more minutes. Absolutely, right? You got to play your best players more minutes. But there's a line. There's a line. You can't be running these dudes 44 minutes a night. And you had a series where they're lucky it didn't go seven. It goes six. But they're playing all their guys a ton of minutes. And then you get into this one. And, like, even if they were able to get by the Pacers, I think you see that it's just, like, it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable. It's not even about, like, are they in shape enough to go that long? They can. These guys are freak athletes. But it's just the wear and tear over time. And you saw it. Legitimately, there was not a player on the Knicks that wasn't at least in some way hampered. And obviously, you know, Halley's hurt with his back as well. But, like, Jalen Brunson obviously fractured his hand. He was dealing with some foot stuff. OG hamstring, Mitchell foot. You know, Josh Hart, abdomen, Isaiah Hartenstein was dealing with a little bit of things. Dante DiVincenzo and Deuce were, like, the only guys. And that's just, you know, it's tough for a series to go down like that. But again, that's kind of the game you play when that is your style of coaching. Props to the Pacers, right? Like, absolute props to the Pacers. You don't get this far without being a good basketball team. I'm not taking anything away from them. And at the end of the day, in a series, that's what makes these series to me so interesting, is it's not just about one game or two games or three games. It's a marathon. It's a marathon. And I think these series have showcased it, right? Like, it is not the first to two games. It's not the first to win a road game. It's the first to win four games. And the Pacers, with the way they're set up in terms of, one, it doesn't have to be anyone on any given night. They have multiple different guys that can hurt you. Not that other teams don't, but I think with them, it's even more spread out. And two, there's just depth there. So if guys do go down, you have someone step up. And within that as well, you don't run these guys into the ground. But respect to the Pacers, right? They have a great offense led by Haliburton. They add Pascal. And they're putting on a clinic in terms of how you win as a small market team, right? You find a guy. You build around him. You find maybe a piece you like Pascal, buy low on him, hope that it works out, and then you can extend him. And things have gone absolutely according to plan. It really wasn't long ago when the Pacers were won 25 games. They were stuck in mediocrity for a while, just running out Malcolm Brogdon, Sabonis, and Turner. And they figured it out. Now, they, again, the East, you know, had their things this year with Milwaukee being hurt, New York being hurt, Cavs kind of trying to figure out some stuff. But they do have a task in front of them in terms of moving forward. There have been multiple times, most recently, you think about the Hawks making the Eastern Conference Finals a couple years ago and then realize, shit, it's really, really hard to get back. So I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but just in terms of, like, you know, the Pacers, they got to enjoy this moment for sure, but they still got work to do moving forward. Big one for them. Pacers. The Indiana Pacers are in the Eastern Conference Finals. Good for them. Good for the city. Good for that group of guys. And again, to me, you can talk X's and O's all you want. That Knicks team just ran out of gas. They ran out of bodies. They ran out of healthy bodies. And we're in the second round, right? So even if they did win today and found a way, like, it's just, to me, it's not sustainable. It's just not. And again, part of it is they didn't even have Julius, right? Like, he's there. It changes the lineups. It changes the minutes. I get that. But with Tibbs, I don't know if it'll change. A lot of times people don't, especially at that age, but we'll see. Then we get to Denver, Minnesota. I couldn't watch the first half. Again, leaving to Europe, had some stuff to take care of. But I lock in for the second half. And the Nuggets are up 20. And I'm thinking, mind you, we took the Nuggets plus 110 to win the series after game one. After game two, I'm like, all right, we're cooked. Game three, they come back. Game four, they win. Game five, they win. And now I'm like, all right, let's go. Minnesota takes care of business at home. And then game seven comes. They're up 20. And when I tune in, literally from the moment I tuned in, I got nervous because you could feel it. You could feel it. Basketball is all about rhythm. And generally how you create rhythm is by taking away other teams' rhythm. Like, it's a funny thing where it, like, as a coach, really what you're trying to do is, and as a team, you're trying to create rhythm for yourselves and take rhythm away from the other team. And if you do that, regardless of the shots that you create, although it generally leads to better shots created, you're going to shoot it better and they're going to shoot it worse, you know, compared relative to expectations, given that shot quality. So you saw it, right? Like, I understand it's a chess match, but I'm watching this and it's like, first off, it's taking forever for the Nuggets to get into anything, right? They're getting full court pressure. If they do end up with something, it's a lot of times it's a tough shot, or it's Jokic, who a lot of times is just catching the ball at the three-point line, and you're just asking so much of him to back down from the three-point line. Guys are showing help, leaving, doubling aggressively, one possession. Like, it's just – it's super, super tough. In terms of, one, making it happen in that situation, but two, building rhythm for yourself, and three, just the energy level, that the amount of energy it takes to play that. And then now the Nuggets are getting now the Wolves are getting stops. Now they're getting out, getting in transition, and you can feel it, right? They have rhythm now. Now they're getting shots that they like and shooting them with confidence, and it's building and it's building and it's building. And then on the Nugget side, even when they do get a look here and there, it's like you could tell whether they'll admit it or not, you're thinking about it a little bit more. You're thinking about, I got to hit this shot. I have to hit this shot. I got to stop the run. And it's just a tough mindset and place to hit shots from. And how you, again, it's not a big deal because runs happen because of that exact thing. But eventually you get out of it, right? Eventually you find a way to score the ball or get stops and let you get out and run. And then that kind of turns the rhythm and momentum around. And the Nuggets, all you got to do is, and I know it's not an easy task, but all you got to do is really, when you're up 20 early third, you got to have one or two more of those where you go on a quick 8-0 run, a quick 10-0 run, where you're getting stops, shooting the ball with rhythm, with confidence, knocking it down. And you have Jokic, who's generally the best in the league at generating looks like that. And they just couldn't get anything going. It turned into not even like Jokic back downs, turning over the shoulder and hook shots. Like, it turned into Jokic fadeaways. And it's like, obviously he can hit that shot, but again, expends a lot of energy. And two, it's just like, when you're already in a hole trying to get, or not in a hole, but when you already don't have rhythm and that's kind of what you're turning to, it's just tough, right? Then Jamal's quiet. Jamal was just absolutely locked up by Ant Edwards in the second half, and the Wolves rode that. It felt similar to game one in terms of maybe not quite the lead that the Nuggets had, but the Nuggets had a lead in game one. The Wolves tightened the screws on defense, started moving the ball a little bit more, got out and ran, and next thing you know, they win that game. And so to me, you got to give ultimate respect. Obviously, you can look at a million different things from the Nuggets, be like, oh, they should have played better, and they probably tell themselves that they should. But you don't go in there and beat that team that has won title, that has just been on a historic run at home. You don't beat that team in Denver three times unless you deserve it. So you just got to give props to this Wolves team. They've got a great formula. They've got a top tier shot creator in terms of Ant, where you saw even in the second half, there are times where I felt like it was weird. Again, I know you want to mix up covers, but it didn't seem like he had rhythm. And there were still times where they were doubling, and Ant's doing a great job getting the ball out of his hand, finding open guys, and it leading to some really wide open looks for Jaden McDaniels and Mike Conley and Nas and Kat. And so you have that, right, in Ant, where you can't really box him in. If you want to show two to him, fine, but they're capable scorers around him. Two, you can get downhill on just about as well as anyone, right? Like, obviously, the speed is there, but the size is there. The size is there. So no matter what, if he has got a full head of steam, and obviously the agility is there. So he's not just putting his head down trying to get to the rim. He has the agility and mobility to get around guys at the rim. So you just combine all that. And then on top of that, can shoot the three, can shoot it in the mid-range, really, really expanded the mid-range game. You have a tier one guy as an offensive dude. Then you've got Rudy Gobert, one of the best rim protectors in the league, if not the best rim protector, doing a good job on the boards, protecting the interior of the paint, even can creep out and affect some mid-range shots. You've got Jaden McDaniels and Ant, who are lockdown defenders. You have Mike Conley, who's just the orchestrator of everything. Super, super smart. Make sure he's mastered the game. Obviously, you don't look at him as like this elite point guard anymore, and he's not if you're, going by overall skill, but just in terms of understanding what the game needs, understanding where the ball needs to be, understanding what needs to happen on any given possession, he's going to get it to where it needs to be. Jaden McDaniels hasn't shot the ball well. You know he can shoot the three. Excellent lockdown player. Kat, kind of finding his role as, I know he gets a lot of shit, easy to shit on, kind of goofy. I'm with you there, but can score the hell out of the basketball. Matchup nightmare. Too quick for bigs, like true big, slow footed fives, and too big for fours, right? So no matter what, if he's got it going and aggressive, he can find offense for himself. And that's that second guy outside of Ant a lot of times that needs to step up, and he did tonight. And then no matter what, right, you've got these three bigs where if one of them's in foul trouble, Naz Reid, sixth man of the year, unbelievable offensive player, great size and has some great defensive moments as well. Move the ball, and then on top of that, great coaching staff. So this is a hell of a team, and you just don't beat that Denver team without being a really, really, really good basketball team. The way they did it was so funky too, and you see it. Like, I think both of these series just show you it's not first to win a road game, not first to any – it's first of four. Knicks win the first two, Pacers win the next two. Knicks win one, Pacers win one, and then the Pacers go into New York and win it. Nuggets lose the first two at home, go win three straight – two on the road, one at home, lose the next two. Cool day for basketball, man. If you told me at the start of the day that both road teams would win these game sevens, I would have looked at you a little funny. I'd be like, are you sure? They did, man. It was a good day of basketball. Let's get into these last two series, man. We got the Pacers and the Celtics. We'll look at it from a series perspective, and we'll look at it from a game one perspective. Let's start with the Pacers-Celtics. Celtics -850 to win this series. Obviously not laying that. There's no way you're laying that. Let's open up correct score. They don't have it out for Mavs Wolves yet. But they got Pacers. If the Pacers sweep the Celtics, that's +6,000. If the Pacers win 4-1, +3,500. Pacers win 4-2, +1,400. Pacers win 4-3, +1,400. Celtics sweep +285. Celtics in 5. +185, Celtics in 6, plus 375, Celtics in 7, plus 500. Now, obviously, not laying that number with the Celtics, minus 1850, is ridiculous. Again, I get why the books are doing it. If I had to bet this at all, it's Pacers plus the 600. Do I think they're going to win this series? No, I definitely don't think they're going to win this series. I would make this closer to 450, 460, maybe 500. No way I'm giving the Pacers 600 in this. To me, there's some slight value on the Pacers. Now, you're going to see we've seen this a million times, right? Like, Boston is very, very heavily reliant on the three-point shot. And in a lot of ways, the Pacers are too. Pacers are going to win some games in this series. I really, truly, and fully believe that. We've seen it. The Celtics have lost to the Cavs and the Heat, both, yes, both in game two. But I would not be surprised if the Pacers win two of these games at all. And I, in fact, if I had to bet, Celtics in six plus 375, I don't hate. I know that would mean that they would have to win on the road in Indiana. They have not lost a road game in these playoffs yet. Kristaps going to be back probably game three, maybe game four. He's for sure out the first two games of the series. Again, with the Celtics, the way they run things, Al Horford can step in, play the five. And obviously he doesn't have the same level of dynamic ability that KP does, just as a shooter and a scorer, but super, super solid, good defender, great understanding of the game, great understanding of what they're trying to do, great experience in the playoffs. They're going to be fine. To me, though, just in general, the Pacers are going to be the way that you want to look. Game one, 9.5 point dogs. I will say, I'd lean Pacers for sure at 9.5. That's a huge, huge number. But again, it's one of those things where it's like you just take the psychology of it, and it's played out kind of the same way in both these series with the Celtics, where in game one, they generally come out pretty strong, right? One, they've been well-rested, and two, the Pacers just finished a pretty grueling series, right? Like, I know they blew out the Knicks tonight, but or during the day, but like overall, it's still a taxing series. And so I think in game one, that does set up well. But I think in game two, if the Pacers are around a 9.5 point favorite, that's when you come in on them. I think the other thing is it does take balls, and I personally haven't had the balls to do it to this point. In one of these games, you're going to get the Pacers as a pretty big dog. Even at home, like, this is 9.5. So this implies that if everything were to stay the same, obviously, that, and you don't know that it will, but if everything stays the same, there's no injuries, nothing, whatever, Pacers are probably going to be like a 3.5, 4.5 point dog at home. The Pacers will win a game at home, right? And so one of those games will be plus money. Again, it's anyone's guess as to when it'll happen and how it'll happen. But the Pacers have also won road games. You know, they won a road game in New York, obviously game seven, and then in Milwaukee, they won a game four road game as well. So you know they can do it. Rick Carlisle's a good coach, a lot of experience. And these guys just play hard and play well for each other. And you just see the pace in which they play with. They're a better team to me, clearly, even if you asked me before, they're a better team than the Cavaliers. They're a better team than that Miami Heat team. This line implies that this is going to be a blowout. And again, I'm not paying the Pacers. But to me, there's some value on the Pacers, whether it's going to be in games or if you just have the balls to take the series price. My book personally doesn't have it, but I know there are books where you can have like a series handicap. I wouldn't be shocked. I would not be shocked at all if you see Pacers plus 2.5, which would mean it would probably be pretty juiced, but I don't hate that. 2.5 for the series, which would mean they got to win. If they lose in 6 or 7, you win. Obviously, 5, you know, Celtics get there. But Celtics in 5 is plus 185 for, you know, there's a billion different outcomes. To me, I think it could be plus 2.5, and I don't hate that. I really don't hate that at all. I like overs in these games as well. Again, you've seen a lot of these games with the Knicks. Went over. Knicks are a grindy team, a team that again plays their guys a ton of minutes, which just means during the course of the series, going to have tired moments where they slow the pace down. Celtics shoot a lot of threes, they don't always play with crazy pace, but they shoot a ton of threes. And if they're hitting, right, I think overs in general are going to be the way to go in this series. Overs and Pacers, again, I still think the Celtics win. But to me, this is like a series that goes six. I would say it's more likely it goes six than it goes seven, in my mind. And the books don't necessarily agree. The Celtics in six is plus 375. Celtics in five is plus 185. And I get it, right? I could easily see Celtics. Look, I think there's a decent chance that Indiana comes in and wins game two. We've already seen it happen twice. I don't think it's that crazy to say. So that's where I'm at. And we'll see what happens. Let's get to Dallas, Minnesota. I got Minnesota. And I was very curious to see where the line would end up. I felt like Minnesota would be a decent favorite. Nothing crazy, but again, in the 160s to 190s, and it's settling in, at least for my book, at 170. I'm sure, again, because this just came out, I'm sure you're going to get different prices in different spots. I'm sure you could find a minus 160, and I'm sure you could find there are spots where it's minus 190. So obviously shop around, but to me, the Timberwolves are the way to go. And that is no disrespect to the Mavs, right? Like, I took the Mavs against LA as close to a pick'em. I didn't actually bet it, but I thought about it and I picked them unofficially. And then I took the Mavs against the Thunder in I took them in seven, but at plus 110, and they got home. So I have full respect for what the Mavs are doing and what they have done. I just think this Minnesota team's a little bit better. And you look at the opponent, again, a lot of it is matchup based, but you look at how the Mavs beat the Thunder. That Thunder team is worse than the Wolves at peak, in my opinion. Again, this is purely my opinion, but that Thunder team is worse than the Wolves. And there were still moments where you were concerned. And the Mavs were absolutely the better team. But you even see in that game six where they're that close to losing. And now you got to go back to OKC and try and win a game seven where you've already lost, or where you, a game seven where you already beat them, and that you know it's really hard to beat a team twice on their home court. So all that to be said, I just think you look at the performance and the Timberwolves had a lot more required of them in their series against Denver. And again, I'm sure there are going to be people that are going to point to flaws that Denver had and mistakes that they made, and I get all that, but you don't beat this. To me, it's not like, oh wow, Denver's crumbling, like they're no longer the top dog. To me, it was just a younger, hungrier team that had played unbelievable defense, knocked them off. Like, I still would go back and say, hey, next year Denver's, if not the favorite, the second in odds to win the title. Like, I don't feel like this is a problem with Denver. It was more just Minnesota. And again, Dallas did a great job against OKC and got it done. I think this Minnesota team is a smidge better. Having watched all of Dallas's games and most of the Minnesota's games, I think they're a smidge better. And I think you look at kind of like, and I think it would be different if Luka was just going on this tear, right? And I understand that a lot of OKC's game plan was make PJ Washington and Derrick Jones beat us, and it didn't work for them, but it worked for the Mavs. But Luka is also not 100%. It's not like, and this is purely by Luka standards. This is not by NBA standards. By NBA standards, Luka's still dominating if you look at the box scores in general. But to me, Luka doesn't look like he's in this dominant form. And the Wolves have guys to match up with Luka, whether it's Jaden or Ant. I know Ant has already said, I'm going to be guarding Kyrie, but Jaden is a handful, and Luka can beat anyone, and Luka's bigger and stronger than Jaden McDaniels, but it's not going to be easy. And I still, I know they did it once. I still feel like if you're playing the Mavs, to me, I'm still okay. Like, I'm sure PJ will hit some shots. He's been great. I don't know if you can win a series, like go win a series with PJ and Derrick Jones being those dudes offensively. Defensively, I can't say nothing wrong, nothing bad about those guys. And even overall, those guys are dogs, and they don't win that Thunder series without them, and they have the mindset, and they were huge. They were absolutely huge. I just feel like Minnesota has the tools to kind of try and do what OKC was doing, just at a higher level and a better level. And that size is just night and day compared to that OKC team, where OKC, they struggled with the size. You saw the offensive rebounds. I also just, Lively's great. Can you play him 30 minutes? And I know you have Gafford too. I don't necessarily trust Gafford. I just think, I know the defense for the Mavs has been really good, and Derek Jones and PJ are going to do a good job locking up. But there are still others. There are still others, and I think it's just going to lead to wide open shots. And I have more confidence in guys like Mike Conley, Jaden McDaniels, Naz Reid, Karl Anthony Towns hitting shots than I do Derek Jones, PJ Washington, Timmy Hardaway, and Josh Green. And to me, with the way Ant's playing, and I know there are going to be nights where he doesn't score it well, he's growing as a player in terms of how he's seeing games, how he's reading games, making the right read, making the right play. And he's just got that ultra competitive spirit. So to me, I get it. The line is fair, right? Like, I'm not rushing to bet the Timberwolves at minus 170. I would make it about minus 170, minus 180. So there's nothing I'm going to bet there. I don't hate, like, if you want to bet parlay the Celtics Wolves, I don't hate that. Let me see what that even comes out to. It's not even going to be even money. It's not. But it might be like close to doable. Yeah. It's like minus 145. Like, it's high. Yeah, I don't think that's worth it, to be honest, parlaying those two. In terms of game one with Dallas, Minnesota, it's tough. It's tough. To me, there are some series where it's clearly like, all right, let's feel it out. Watch game one, see how it goes. And to me, this is that series. Where, again, I like Minnesota before, but I don't know how the hell it gets to it, right? Like, if you told me Minnesota was going to win the series against Denver, I would have been surprised. Absolutely would have been surprised. I am surprised. But if you told me it went Minnesota in Denver game one, Minnesota in Denver game two, Denver in games three and four in Minnesota, Denver in game five, Minnesota in game six, and Minnesota in game seven, I would have told you to get out. Get out, bro. It's not going down like that. So, again, and even OKC Dallas, where OKC blows out Dallas, Dallas blows out OKC, Dallas wins at home, OKC steals game four, Dallas goes back to OKC and wins in OKC, and then OKC winning for the majority of game six in Dallas, and Dallas pulls it off late with a foul on a three-point attempt where the ball was blocked, and I do think it was a foul, but it's also a tough luck foul because you do get the ball, and then you can't – it's hard to control what happens after you get the ball. But all that to say, I don't know how it's going to get there, but I do think Minnesota wins this, and I think the fact that they have home court is huge in this. It is absolutely huge in this, and I wouldn't be shocked if Dallas wins a game in Minnesota, but I would not be shocked at all if Minnesota wins a game in Dallas either. So that's how I see it, guys. Major props to really all four of these teams, right? With Boston having just a legendary regular season. Again, none of that really matters. They understand, like, this is what we play for. And I know a lot of people give them shit, but it's like JT and JB have been there year after year after year, and you got to go through it. That's why when we talk about OKC, and I talked a little bit about it on Twitter, talk about it here now, is like, as a young team, you've got to go through those moments. Like, no team just bursts onto the scene and wins the championship or even makes a deep, deep, deep run in their first year. Even Minnesota last year, right? Went to Denver, took an L in five or six. Boston has done it multiple times, including even getting to the finals. Like, to me, they have so much experience. This is that kind of their time. And this is Indiana's first time. So I do think Boston wins, but props obviously to Indiana and the season that they've had. And they're going to compete. They're going to compete. I do think there will be moments where it's like, oh, well, you know, Boston's going to win that series. And then with Dallas, Minnesota, both Dallas a little bit more experience being here. Luka's been in these. Kyrie's been in these. But I do think just the pure basketball that is being played, I think Minnesota can get to a slightly higher level. And I could be wrong. and I don't like doubting Luka, and I didn't. I don't like doubting Luka and Kyrie's playing amazing basketball. I know a lot of people will point to the scoring numbers and them being down, but Kyrie's just playing winning basketball, making the right play every time, playing with great pace, playing with great energy, and just leading a group that is mostly young with poise and just I love what I've seen from him, regardless of what the numbers. That dude is helping that team win basketball games. Should be a great conference finals, guys. I will tune in at some point during these series in Europe to just talk about what's gone down. Again, it's tough. I don't like talking about, and with the playoffs, you got to be locked in. You don't want to come in here just spewing nonsense, but like, it's hard. Like, I don't know how much I'm going to be able to watch. I'm going to do my best so we can get on here and talk about it. But I also don't want to come on and just like not have watched the games and just talk out of my ass, because that's no one needs that. No one needs that. But I love you guys. I hope you've been enjoying these games. The Final Four. We're down to the Final Four. If you told me the Final Four this year would be the Pacers, Celtics, Mavs, and Wolves, I would have been pretty surprised, bro. What? No Wolves? Or sorry, no Nuggets? No, yeah, it's really honestly the Nuggets that I'm surprised aren't here. I would have thought that one of the Bucks or Knicks would probably be here too, but here we are. Here we are. Enjoy these games, guys. They get going Tuesday and Wednesday. And I will do my best to holler at you guys from Europe. I love you guys. Enjoy your week. Get after it. Go be great. And we'll talk to you guys soon. Peace.